Hi, everyone, and welcome to the House of Pod. I'm Kaveh.
And I'm Lizzie.
And if this is your first time listening, we're a medical...
sort of.
...podcast where we try to discuss medicine and health in a relatable way.
And we will answer questions you may not feel comfortable asking your doctor and definitely won't bring up to your friends.
And on today's show, we have Michael Kaplan from the podcast Lost in America. He's going to talk to us about what it's like to be a 41-year-old who was just diagnosed and treated for a very serious heart attack. Stay tuned.
The opinions on this podcast are broadcasted for educational and informational purposes only and do not represent the opinions of our employers. These opinions are not intended as a diagnosis, treatment, or as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a local physician or other healthcare professional for your specific healthcare and/or medical needs or concerns.
And welcome back to the House of Pod. I'm Kaveh.
I'm Lizzie.
And I'm Joe.
Guys, how are we?
Very good.
Pretty darn good.
Whoa. I mean, honestly, I'm not that good. So I mean, I'm fine, really. But I had this like minor surgery just last week. And it's like on this weird body part thing.
You can't get herpes removed surgically.
No, yeah. Joe? I feel like everybody has like a weird body part thing that they don't talk about. Like some people pick at like that thing on their lips. Some people pick at like, some people twirl their hair and rip off their loose end, their split ends. And like, I had this weird ear thing and it's just called like a sinus tract that like didn't close up. It's not really interesting or sexy and I wish it was cooler, but it was just bothering me to the point where I had to see an ENT doctor, ear, nose, and throat. And you know, apparently it's only in pediatric population. So I had to see a pediatric ENT doctor. That's not the joke.
That's great though. It's like your emotional, like they check your emotional level and they're like pediatrics.
Right, exactly. It was not based on anatomy. It was totally based on my emotional EQ or whatever. So I had this thing and it was taken out and it was like, it ended up being like real surgery. I didn't think it would end up being so sort of involved, like general anesthesia. Like I was down.
I had no idea.
I know. And like they removed this huge thing that I probably should post up because obviously I looked at my chart and copied the image and I'm not sure if we should keep this in.
We might have to cut this,
but I might post it on like our podcast website, House of Pod. And it's like this huge thing. It's like a centimeter big. She holds it up next to the ruler and is like, it's this big thing. And I'm like, oh my God, that came out of me. I think there's brains in it. So anyway, so that happened and now I'm on like antibiotics and stuff and it's awesome. But the thing is that my boyfriend Tyler had to pick me up because the surgery ended up going sort of late and he picked me up and I didn't realize that when he left or when I left, I would need to leave with antibiotics and narcotics. And this is like maybe a test of like a relationship because when I was unconscious in the recovery room, he was told to go to the pharmacy and pick up said antibiotics and narcotics. So when he went to the window, they're like, what's her full name? So like, he needs to know my middle name. What's her birthday? He needs to know my birthday. What's her address? Like, I did not prepare this man for this endeavor. Yeah. Wow. So I'm like, the fact that he returned to me with antibiotics
all of them or a
and narcotics, I feel like we made it to like that next step.
And none of the narcotics were missing.
I don't know because my... First of all, he left that building scot-free with a bunch of narcotics. I don't want to comment on like how that happened, right. But that just happened. And I don't know if there's any pills missing because I haven't taken them because I am terrified, not of addiction, but of constipation.
So, yeah, I'm looking at your ear now.
It's not that impressive. You can barely tell.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a small Frankenstein-looking scar there on your ear, but not impressive.
But the point is Tyler passed the test and got away with a bunch of narcotics.
That's great. Well, good for you.
Boyfriend.
Probably for free.
I'm just still kind of shocked that you had to be under general for that. I thought that would be local. They just numb up the area and get in there, get it out.
I think it's because it's like near my facial nerve. And I also wanted to take this opportunity to ask you guys, what's your weird body thing? Because everyone's got something, no?
I'm not sure if something like that.
Like a lipoma.
I have a weird body, but I don't know if I have a weird body thing.
Right.
Yeah.
doesn't everyone have something that they're like, don't want to talk about? Like my sister has this crust behind her ear that like, you know.
I don't think so. I think it's just you.
My penis is a little small, but that. A little self-conscious about
that. I wish you had just said big and then we could have been like.
No, it's girthy. It's
tuna can.
It's like they call him Coke Can Joe back in high school.
CCJ.
We're going to have to cut this, I think.
Joe, you don't want to be public about
it. I honestly don't have a body part that I can think of off the top of my head other than my small penis. Honestly.
Small. I'm not sure we're going to keep this.
I've been told
it's not small. You know how I know? Because remember.
6 inches.
That's a good, that's above average.
Is it?
If for your guy your size and height, that's pretty good.
Or erect? And I'm not sure if these guys are fucking with me.
No, hold on. This is probably not going to make it, but here's the truth, because this is what guys do. At least they did. I don't know if
we all measure
are better, but everyone measured. Everyone in our group measured. And Joe was not at the bottom of that list. Joe was not. You were higher up on that list.
Here is the truth. Women know that men measure, and we all know that size doesn't matter. Like 100,000%.
I did not know that. I've heard girls tell me that they love the big dick.
That's because that's bedroom talk.
Not saying it, they're like, I don't want a big dick because it hurts. So I don't know which is true.
I don't know about hurting, but I've never heard any female friend, and I think I have 5 or 6 very close female friends.
She knows 5 women.
I mean, I know like dozens, but not all of them are going to tell me about their sex life.
Keep going.
No one's ever been like, I love a big dick.
Woohoo!
Do you think? Okay, hold on.
I'm serious. I'm not making you feel better.
Do you think that does make me feel better?
Let me ask you a question. I'm not disagreeing with that. I think I've always heard the same thing, which is like, you know, I think women are more interested in how guys use it. Although, I think I have heard that girth is more important than length. So if they were to count one thing, it would be that. But do you think a girl would feel self-conscious about saying that? Like,
I want a big dick?
Yeah. Do you feel like she would feel
because someone would be like, wait, you want a big dick? Or you want
right. You want to have one?
Wait. No. Yeah.
Like, do you feel like a girl would feel comfortable saying that? Or do you feel like she would be looked at like kind of like, oh, wow, this girl gets around a lot.
Maybe when we were 20, but now that we're around 40, I don't think that people in my life are that self-conscious about, you know, a lot of them have been married years, you know, a couple of my friends over 10 years. And I just don't think people care anymore about that. You know, I think that people are over it and they're just trying to make sex sort of fun with someone they've been doing it with for a decade or more. And people, I don't think mince words about it that much. I think sex toys and stuff is a little taboo still. And I think that if you are self-conscious about that, I think being confident and like we could talk to Jennifer Gunter about bringing things into the bedroom that are not just your body, yeah. I think is like a great idea.
I don't know of any good sex toys for men. A lot for women.
No. We're not working on getting you off. No, we're working on you pleasing a woman if you're insecure.
That's a good question, though. There is something called the Fleshlight. And it's like, it's called that because it looks like a flashlight. It's a big cylinder. And you like, I think it looks like a flashlight maybe. And then you take off the top.
I think it looks like flesh.
And then inside, it's like fleshy, I guess.
Actually,
I'm talking like I don't know exactly. Yeah, like I don't have like 5 of them at home. But like, no, and then you put your penis into that and you basically use that to.
Oh, it's like an enhancer type thing.
I think it's like a fake vagina, basically. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were saying that you put it on yourself into a woman.
Oh, no, no. I think that would be dangerous.
Yeah, and also not as much fun for you, the man.
Yeah, no, that'd
be weird.
Wait,
so you're telling...
So I'm saying there is, I think there are some sex toys for guys, but I don't think it,
there's nothing.
Oh, I wasn't thinking at all about how to please a man. Not even for one.
I know, well, that's where we're going. That's where we're going.
But no, he's not considered how to please a man.
Not once. But we are talking about how you were feeling sort of insecure. And I thought I was trying to give you ideas about how to make yourself feel less sort of stage performance anxiety. Like if you're going to do other stuff with hands or toys or whatever, then that takes some of the heat off of you.
I don't have performance anxiety. I have size anxiety.
No, I understand, but I feel like those are related. If you're having size anxiety, how do you perform? You know, it's about confidence. It's about showing, and whether it's big or small, like being excited about a woman is often all I think a woman needs, you know?
Correct.
In addition to foreplay.
Yeah, well, that went away. I did not expect it to.
We were talking about my surgery and anesthesia.
From your ear cyst to this, but it's great. Hey, let's keep it.
I don't want to know how we transition from my ear to sex. So
yeah, you know what? Who cares about transitions
it's
anymore?
It's a whole.
Body parts.
You're before
body parts.
Before we break and we go to our interview, let me just ask you: do you guys have anything you want to plug for yourself or for anyone else?
We are about to interview Michael Kaplan, who has a podcast, Lost in America, with his friend Turner Sparks.
And we're going to interview him about being a 41-year-old who has a heart attack, like a real deal heart attack, not just a little bit of chest pain, GERD type thing, but the real deal. And we'll talk to him about what that's like to have that at such a young age. Let me see. I have nothing of our own. We have no shows coming up, Joe, but I think I should plug some of our friends because we have some really talented
sure.
friends and they need some plugging. Well, they don't need it, but I need to do it for them. So here's the first guy I'll plug, Joe Sparrow. He is a great musician down in LA. If you get the chance to hear him live, please do. But you can find him on Spotify, Apple Music. He is dropping a bunch of singles every month until July. I really love his music. We've always loved playing with him back in the day. Joe Sparrow, check him out. And on that note, we'll go to break, come back with Michael Kaplan, whose show is called Lost in America. You can find it at lostinamericapod.com or pretty much anywhere you find podcasts.
So on the show today, we have Michael Kaplan, a co-host of a podcast, Lost in America, who at age 41, not the healthiest guy and absolutely not the unhealthiest guy, had a heart attack just a few weeks ago. And he's kind enough to be on our show and tell his story. Thank you for coming on, Kaplan.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm seeing the perks of having a heart attack that I'm getting getting on your podcast. Very exciting.
So many. And this is just one of many, I'm sure.
Although I didn't know you were going to say I wasn't the healthiest guy, because I think I'm the healthiest guy who's ever had a heart attack, in my opinion. But
yeah, maybe.
Well, yeah, that's actually, you know, why we want to talk to you, because clearly it's shocking to people when they hear that. When you tell people that you had a heart attack at 41, what's the first thing they say?
Yeah, people are exactly the first thing they say is they're like, they think I'm joking, and then they want to hear the story, and then their heads start turning to themselves, and they're like, oh, I should go to the doctor, or I should.
Right.
Because everyone's in a panic. They're like, if it can happen to you, it can happen to me. So, like, I probably know a half dozen to maybe more people who have gone to the doctor or going to the doctor, like, really soon to have tests
right,
and everything.
Right.
That's a great outcome.
Everyone's finding a cardiologist now, so I've been helping the business.
I mean, I think you're going to overwhelm the field of cardiology. I think the first great step is maybe going to a primary care doctor. And if you get some people to go, that's a good service. I mean, you should take credit where
your
it's
heart
due.
Attack was worth it then.
Totally worth it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm here to help your business. I know it's tough out there for you, the doctors.
Yeah. Well, can you tell us about what happened? So I know you were skiing with your family.
Yeah, I had a good stay of skiing on the day before this all happened. I was totally normal, totally fine. Went swimming that night, hot tub, went out with the family, have two kids, and played Twister that night, no injuries. And then I went to sleep, and I woke up about 5:30 in the morning with it felt almost like heartburn is what I thought I had. But I couldn't go back to sleep. And then I went to the bathroom and then I threw up. That's how this began. And then I went back to sleep after that. And then I woke up about an hour later. I threw up again. This sort of happened for about, overall, this happened for about five or six hours, I want to say. I would say in about hour three or four, I started to get very short of breath. And that's when I thought, because I thought I had food poisoning. That's how this, I really thought, oh my God, I've never had food poisoning. I always joke about I've never had food poisoning, that my stomach's invincible and I jinxed it. So I thought I had food poisoning. But then when I started getting short of breath, I started to think maybe this is something else, but I just could not move from the hotel. I was so in such like agony. So it took me until I really, really had like thrown up everything until we finally went to urgent care. And they gave me an EKG when I mentioned something about being short of breath, and then that's when it dawned on everyone that you might be having a heart attack.
But you never had chest pain. You just had like nausea, vomiting, shortness of breath.
Yeah, I didn't have chest pain. Everyone's always like, oh, is your arm hurting? That's like the thing that all the laymen have heard about. Your arm hurts, or
yeah, your left arm.
No, my arm didn't hurt. My back did hurt, but I thought that was from carrying, you know, two kids and myself, skis and boot bags around all day the day before.
Yeah.
So apparently that was part of it. But yeah, so I, you know, and even at urgent care, they weren't sure, but they, you know, they didn't look good on the EKG. So they put me in a, you know, they put me in an ambulance and sent me to the hospital. And that's where they confirmed that I was, in fact, having a heart attack.
So when they were doing all these tests and they're working up the MI, are you like Googling heart attack? Are you like calling people, you know, there are doctors? What are you doing at that point?
What's MI?
Heart attack, right.
Oh, okay. That's, yeah. That's
myocardial infarction, yep.
They put me in an ambulance really fast, and I didn't have a chance to tell anybody or do anything. I was just sort of like trying to stay calm. The nurse said, or the paramedic said, you know, the most important thing is to stay calm. So I just chatted with her, and it wasn't so when I got to the hospital and they confirmed I was having a heart attack, and they said, you know, that's the good, you know, the good news is we're on top of it. The bad news is that we need to, you need a stent, and we can't do that here. We need to get you to another hospital. And then they gave me morphine or fentanyl. I forget. Yeah. They gave me some painkillers. And at this point, and they just sort of let me sit there while they were like, you know, getting everything together. And at this point I started, texting people and just, I didn't really want to Google things. I was sort of trusting these doctors knew what they were talking about. I didn't know what I could look up exactly.
Yeah.
At this point, they didn't really have a choice. Like, I couldn't be like, you know what, I'm gonna get a second opinion.
Right.
I heard that, so sort of in their hands, so I trusted them.
That's good. Instead of fighting and advocating for yourself and asking a million questions, you just enjoyed the fentanyl and started texting jokes to your friends. Sounds like that's the take home from your experience.
Fentanyl is a fantastic drug. I'm not saying I'm recommending it, but I can see the appeal. Because I was very lucid. I felt good. I was texting well. My texting game was high. So, they came over to me and they said, we're going to get you a chopper because the nearest hospital is not that close. And then they came over to me to tell me, oh yeah, it's snowing out. We can't get you a chopper. So this doctor basically is like, you're going to lose the golden hour. You're not going to make it, but, it'll be okay.
Not reassuring, right?
So is that a real thing? Is that like this whole, because everyone's like the first hour is important, but I don't know.
It is. It's called door to cath time, and it's really, or door to balloon time. And it is like proven that you want to open up the artery in the heart as quickly as possible. And this is why Kaveh and I chose GI, because there's no door to butt time. That's what I told my friends, right. You know, why'd you choose GI? Like, I can get to the hospital, but I have 2, 3, 4 hours. The cardiologists who are opening up hearts, opening up arteries in the heart, they have like 90 minutes. They gotta put that stent in. So
you didn't want to be bothered on weekends to have to get there fast.
Exactly.
We're still bothered. Right. But listen, so what happened next? What happened at this point? Actually, two questions. First, what are the doctors saying about your age in relation? Are people like, are you doing drugs? Are you on cocaine, etc.? And then tell us what happened next when you couldn't get the chopper.
Well, it's funny when I was at the urgent care and I sort of like, as I mentioned, I kind of went numb and everything. That was like the real surreal moment when I was like, holy shit. Like I was trying to process that I was having a heart attack. I heard the people outside say something about like, oh, drugs, ask them about cocaine. And I was sort of flummoxed as I was on a family vacation with a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old.
And you only do that when you're not on vacation. I get
exactly,
it.
Exactly. But, no, haven't done that in years. So when I got into the ambulance, the paramedic, it was actually the person who had said it. She apologized to me and she said, oh, she thought they said I was 21 and I don't look 41. So the only way a 21-year-old was having a heart attack is most likely drugs. But I guess 41-year-olds, you know, it's possible to have it without drugs.
I mean, it's still really young.
So tell us what happened then. So you were told that they can't get a chopper. You're told that the golden hour is passing by, and you'll probably be fine. What happens next?
Yeah, and I'm just, they're checking on me a lot, and they keep telling me how important it is I get going, but it really took a while for an ambulance to get there. They did finally get me an ambulance, and you know, my wife was with me, and she had to go. She had been with me. She had followed the ambulance in urgent care to the hospital, but then she had to leave because our kids were in ski school. So it was I was trying to like stay relaxed, but I was very nervous because she doesn't drive ever. So this was a whole.
Much less in snow.
Yeah. Much less speed down highways in the snow while your husband's having a heart attack.
Yeah.
So they put me eventually in an ambulance. And it's an interesting thing when you go in the ambulance, you're in like a gown at this point and you go outside. They haven't perfected any way to keep you warm this whole time. It's like, no, they warn you and you're like, you know what? I'm having a heart attack. I don't want to slow the process down. So just throw me in. But,
right.
And then they drove me, it was about a 45 minute drive. I finally looked it up yesterday for the first time in like 5 weeks of this happening, of looking up what the route they took probably was. But it's about a 45 minute drive to Dartmouth Hitchcock Hospital is where I went. I don't know if you know anybody there, but we drive. They're just talking to me the whole time, keeping me, you know, trying to keep me, I guess, I don't know, in a good place. Is that what they're supposed to do that? Or
sure, yeah.
Were they supposed to?
Yeah, keep you calm. That's an important part of. They're always going to be. I'm sure they were telling you how important it is to stay calm during that process, which is, I'm sure, super difficult to do.
I've never thought about what the EMT folks, paramedics, do in an ambulance if there's like downtime or a commute. I've actually never once, for the life of me, thought about like what you're supposed to do. You know, let the person like Google what an MI/heart attack is, or just be like chatty. You know?
Yeah, she was. They were pretty chatty. I think maybe they were. I mean, I was chatting back because I don't want to be rude. I wanted them to like me. Maybe it'll help like move things along.
Right.
So, I did think it was weird as we got off the exit. She's like, this is a really excellent steakhouse we're going by. Like Jacqueline's it was called or something.
She's just running out of stuff to talk about at that point.
I really think it's odd to recommend steakhouses to anybody who's in an ambulance, but especially if you're in a heart attack.
Yeah. Right.
Seems, so I was telling everyone who visited me to check out the steakhouse. I would like to vicariously found out, but I never found out how it was. So we get to the ambulance and she keeps saying like, oh, there'll be people there to greet us. I've never in my life been in an ambulance. I've been very lucky. So I don't know the protocol of when you burst into a hospital, but, we get there and it's like, we go in, I don't know if we went through the wrong entrance or what, but there was nobody there. Like it's totally empty. Mm-hmm. And they were, I mean, you think like the move would be to, I don't know, wait or try to find somebody and stay still, but they just decided they were very, you know, proactive. And they said, we've been here before. They didn't know where the cardiac lab was. So they're just like roaming the halls, and this hospital, I guess all hospitals are big, but compared to New York City hospitals, which is my experience with having two kids, this hospital was like the most massive hospital I've ever been in. And I don't know, it felt like this is precious time. Like, this is important. And they were like roaming the halls, had no idea where they were going.
Right. She knows where the steakhouse is, but didn't know where the cath lab was. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So eventually we did find somebody who pointed us in the right direction and we made it. And when we got to the room, it was just like a team of doctors and they were like, oh, Mr. Catherine, we'll be waiting for you. So they were ready. That was the good news.
Yeah.
So you had it's called an angiogram or a cardiac cath is what you had.
Yeah. Cardiac cath. Yep. That's what they were kept saying. This is the good, you know, cardiac cath center. And I, you know, I was on my phone. I got a text from like an aunt or an uncle who sent me like a US News review of the hospital, like how it was. And I thought it was hilarious. Cause like, what, like, did I have a choice of that? It's like, you know, it's like if someone's going on death row and this is their last meal, like, you don't be like, oh, I wouldn't have gotten that. Like,
right.
I was done. I had no.
Right. I want the steak from a different steakhouse. Right.
Yeah. I had like to sort of have confidence that these people were good. And it was, you know, so, and then even later, I think it was probably the same relative told me that they found out that this was the person who operated on me was supposedly the best one there, the most experienced. But like, again, like what was the, who cares at this
point?
So tell us about the cardiac catheterization that you got. What was that like?
Do you remember it?
Yeah, I remember it because you're awake. And you know, it's very surreal because they give you the anesthesia that makes you numb. Like you're getting your wisdom teeth out or something, but you don't go to sleep. And then you had to move your body a certain way and stay very still, they said. And I'm really bad. I have Spielkiss, as they say in Yiddish, but I rallied my ADHD, everything. I just was like, I'm going to stay still for this moment. It's like, you can see, you can't feel anything, but you see like there's monitors above you, sort of to the left. So you can see like your heart, you see, I mean, you don't know. I don't know. I didn't Google it. So I didn't know what they're supposed to be doing. Like, I didn't know if it was going well.
And they didn't explain it to you. You were just sort of watching.
I mean, they explained exactly what they were going to do, and they had me sign something at some point a couple times. Yeah. You know?
But you want them focusing on their thing. I'm sure you were just like, just guys, just do your thing. Don't worry about me. Worry about me, but don't talk to me. Just do your thing and make sure you do a great job.
Yeah, I'm very like, I mean, my father's he's a foot doctor, a podiatrist, you know, but you know, I always trust doctors usually, you know, I come from how my family is. So I'm not like asking 1,000 questions ever. Unless it seems like something pertinent.
Sure.
But they explained it to me. The stent's going to go through your wrist, which was, you know, on the way ambulance over, she had said that they might have to go through my groin, which is a longer recovery. I should try to ask for the wrist, but they just did the wrist. And it goes up and they, you know, they do this, balloon. It's basically, you know, clear space. And it's like, that sounds cool. All right, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And so I can't really see, like, I thought I'd see the balloon on the screen. I didn't really see that. I was a little disappointed.
Unless they're showing it to you, I think it's really hard to see that stuff, you know? And they ended up putting in one stent, you said, or?
They put in one stent. And I didn't know when it was done too, because the paramedic had made it seem like she had experience with family members having heart attacks. And she said like the second they were like done, I would feel this release and I'd feel all better basically. But that didn't happen for me. So I was just like, oh, you're done. Okay. And then I threw up once. I was a little, but other than that, I felt a little better mentally, but I didn't actually feel any better. I still felt pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they said I was good. They started, you know, they gave me some medications and they gave me my pee urinal, which was like my best friend all week. The thing you get, the cup you got to pee in all week.
The urinal, yeah.
They were like, it's important that you try to, there was I forget what it was. There was a reason why I had to pee before. I was good if I peed then, before I left the room. I don't know. So
For women, it's testing for pregnancy.
They were checking to see if you were pregnant.
Right.
Yeah.
Not for you.
I guess that was it.
I think they probably just didn't want you to maybe pee yourself if the procedure went really long. I mean,
Or maybe it was like they gave me a medication that makes you pee, and I forget. Maybe that's what it was. Like LASIK or something.
Giving you a diuretic called LASIK.
Yeah, that's what it was. I think you're right. And then so as the week went on, like that first time, I like could not. There was like two nurses with me, and I just like was there, and I was like in an empty hallway, basically made them leave me alone, and it took me like 10 minutes, and I finally peed, and then. As the days went on, it was like I just needed privacy, and then like I couldn't pee. And then like as the days went on, I was like a homeless guy. I just was like, or whatever. I don't care if someone in the room, I'll just pee. I'm ready.
We broke you.
They broke me. I had no pride anymore. So it was.
So Joe here has a question for you.
Yeah, Michael, right. A very interesting story. You know, I'm 42 years old, so I'm like listening to every single word you're saying.
And Joe is terrified.
I'm terrified.
Yeah, you're too, man. You're playing with house money at this point.
I guess so.
Borrow time.
My question that I'm just dying to hear is, why did you have the heart attack? How did you have the heart attack? What did the doctors tell you was the reasoning or root cause?
Tell us why.
Yeah.
Why did you do this?
Choice. The devil was like, you could have a heart attack at age 41. you know, I haven't. It's weird. I love my cardiologist in the city. I think he's great, but he's very like clinical and just like, I don't know. He doesn't go off. He never like just says things like why he thinks I had a heart attack. He doesn't speculate at all. Mm-hmm. So if I ask him, he sort of doesn't give me an answer. So I don't know. I guess nobody knows. I assume part of it's genetic and part of it's, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, I was a little overweight at the time, I guess.
It's
I wasn't hugely overweight, but.
It's definitely both. I mean, there's some component of genetics and there's some component of environment. We're looking at you via FaceTime and you certainly don't look like the kind of guy that we would expect to have that problem. And you're not doing the kinds of things.
I haven't even taken my shirt off.
Expect.
So, you know.
Oh, I'm hoping that comes later. But
For those listeners who couldn't hear that, he said he was going to take his shirt off for us.
Yeah, it's a proof that have at least a two-pack. But no, yeah, it's weird. I had some clues as I look back on it. Like I never had heartburn my whole life, and in the past couple months beforehand, I was starting to get heartburn, and I was starting to get. I had a really. I had some stress, I guess, from work. That's I think an element. And I had a really bad case a couple of days before this happened of being just very short of breath, like out of nowhere. In hindsight, I realized I should have gone to the doctor the second that happened. I made a point to make an appointment the next week because I was fine. It lasted for about 10, 15 minutes, and then I was fine. But that was probably they said that was probably they explained it at some point better than I will now. But it was sort of like a false heart attack. Like they almost like there was like blockage, but it probably didn't quite. Because when I went to the hospital, I was at like 99% blockage when I actually went in. Well, so
now you've made Joe even more terrified because of the heartburn thing. But that's not like a textbook symptom. I think the shortness of breath sounds sort of more terrifying.
I was like feeling a little off, I guess, as in that month run up a little bit. But yeah, it wasn't anything that you could be like, oh, obviously you're going to have a heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
no. Well, where are you at now then? What's your doctor telling you now?
Now I'm doing pretty good. I had my stress test on last week and he said I did better than expected. You know, when I was in the hospital, everybody kept saying to me and also since when I've gotten out, I've talked to other people who have had heart attacks. They always talk about like cardiac rehab is really important. Mm-hmm. I haven't even started yet because first I had to get an appointment, which took like weeks to meet some guy at NYU. And then then he said, wait for the stress test. And then I gave them the results. And then a person called me like 4 days later, finally, and said, now I'm meeting with a nurse next week who's going to be like a consultant. It's like the third different person consulting. So I'll probably be like totally back to normal by the time I start this cardiac rehab.
Yeah.
But because it's going to be like two more weeks probably. But yeah, hopefully that'll help a little bit.
Do you feel back to normal? Is that like what you're saying?
I would say in the last week, I'm not back to normal, but I definitely took a positive turn where I have, cause like I had a long recovery that probably this was probably the result partially of how long it took for me to get to the hospital. Mm-hmm. I think, had a little bit to do with it. Like where I actually had a second, they went back in the day after my stent cause I was in so much pain. They thought maybe there was something else wrong. There wasn't.
Yeah.
And it just took me several days of just like, it really took me like all week to even get out of the hospital and to walk. So it was slow going at first when I got home, but I would say like, you know, 2 weeks ago I started feeling better walking. And then last week I really turned the corner where I can walk. Like I walked 4 miles the other day, according to my Apple Watch.
Yeah.
And I probably could like I haven't run, but I could probably do like a slow jog and for a little bit. I just would get short of breath more than normal.
So what happened was it sounds like from what I've also heard you say is that your heart was damaged to the point where you have heart failure now and hopefully it will recover, but that's the consequence of a heart attack. You have complications. It's not just a blockage that gets open, right? It's now you're at risk for arrhythmias, which is irregular heartbeats, and heart failure where you have volume fluid going in places like your lungs it shouldn't go, you know? So that's I guess what your doctors are monitoring now, right?
Yeah, I mean, in the hospital, they said that there's this thing called like the ejection fracture, right?
They said
like a normal person's like 55% of the amount of blood their heart's pumping, and in the hospital they said I was about around 40, which they said was pretty good considering the heart attack I had. But Dr. New York said it's 35, and he was rounding up to get there. So yeah, he put me. I'm on this thing called a life vest right now. This is my little doohickey you can see in the FaceTime. But it's a vest I'm wearing. Like I'm supposed to wear it like 20, as much as possible, basically.
Are you wearing it right now?
I'm wearing it right now. Oh. Yeah. So it's this is like the walkie talkie, and it's basically like it's to shock me if I were to have an arrhythmia like you mentioned, and I guess I would like collapse. It would like read that and
it's an external defibrillator, like it's defibrillators on the outside of your body,
like what you see in airports. They're AEDs, external defibrillators.
It's like the clamp thing, right? Like
the shocker, you mean? The
so it's a little stressful because it my heartbeat apparently like it has like a small uptick, so it doesn't have big moves you can see in the EKG. So the thing often reads like two readings as one. And then it thinks my heartbeat's too high, and then I get like a vibration.
So you're getting shocked all the time?
Well, I don't get shocked, but it vibrates. It's like a warning. Basically, you have to press these two buttons.
That could be fun.
And if you don't press them within a few seconds, it turns to a siren. And the siren gets louder. And at some point, I haven't got this far yet, but after about 25 seconds, somebody told me 25 seconds, someone told me 50 seconds. I don't know which one to believe. They both work for the company. But they said that at some point it tells bystanders to stand back.
Yeah.
And then like it releases gel on my body and then it shocks me.
Wow.
Because you're going to explode. Yeah. You're like in Queens and your body's going.
This is like the plot for like Crank 3 or something. This is fantastic.
Yeah. I got a question. Like Michael and for the doctors here, how do they check for the blockages and your overall risk of having another heart attack? What's the screening process and why isn't that done more often prior? So it seems like they're always finding about the blockages after a heart attack. Why?
Because people don't go to their doctors. Well, this is the point of the podcast.
But if you go to the physical, I've never been tested for anything related to that.
The thing is, he had a cardiac catheterization, which is when they go into your arteries, they go into your blood vessels, and they get to your heart, and they inject contrast to see how open they are. That's not a totally benign, like, you know, outpatient thing that people just have done. There's risk to it. It's pretty invasive. It's a thing you don't want to do unless there's a good reason to do it. So it's not the kind of thing you just have everyone do.
Yeah. That's like Kaplan said, your groin or your wrist. Right. Like these are like needles in your arteries.
So there are other methods of sort of kind of determining. There's the other tests that cardiologists and primary care doctors can do. At the end of the day, if you are considering or you're worried about your cardiac risk, talk to your doctor about it. A primary care doctor is a great place to start. They'll go over what risk factors you have. They can talk to you about checking your cholesterol, et cetera.
Yeah.
There are tests that out there that some doctors pick over others that are non-invasive. They all have their pluses and minuses. Since neither of us are cardiologists, we'll stay out of that. But the first step and the most important thing is to talk to your doctor about what risk you may or may not have.
You've seen on TV people on treadmills and like, you know, that's like an exercise, a stress test is what it's called. And there's versions of that. So if you are worried, you know, what Michael Kaplan's saying is, you know, if you're having shortness of breath and you don't feel good and you feel off, you know, that's the first step. You know, you're not going to go to a cardiologist and get this coronary angiogram or cardiac catheterization. These are different words for the same thing.
Yeah.
That's not going to be the first thing. You should not get that. And you can get, again, an echocardiogram, like Kaplan's saying, or an echo stress test. There's all these modalities to look at the heart, but you don't do that in 41-year-olds who are going, you said, to CrossFit, you know, a couple times a week and who are lugging around ski boots and a couple kids. It's just not part of like the repertoire, you know, of most doctors. You have to come to the doctor with symptoms. You don't do these tests on everybody.
That's a bummer.
I mean, if I would have gone after that shortness of breath and they found, like, I guess they could have done like what were they doing, like bypass, or they gone in?
Not bypass. What they would have done is they probably would have started with like an X-ray, seeing that you had some backup of fluid around your lungs and wondered where that was from. It probably would have ended up getting you an echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound of your heart. From there, they may see that it wasn't pumping the way it should, and that probably would have led you to where you got. But I mean, at the end of the day, it sounds like, knock on wood, sounds like things are working out okay. Sounds like you're doing pretty well now, and gonna be back. You sounds like you're already back on your feet.
I'm on my feet. I'm doing all right. It's like a whole, you know, it's like I spent like so much time in the hospital. It was like I was proud of myself when I was wearing like pants again because I've been in a gown for like a week. So it was little steps, little progress, and then I was excited to like go into like a bodega and like order, you know, try to like be like in civilization again. But so then there's a little, but then this past week I feel like real, like I can return to society and feel like I have something to talk about. It's great. Everyone wants to talk about this heart attack. So
well, man,
it's good for our podcast because we were really running out of material. Now we got fresh material. So,
speaking of which, tell us about the podcast, where we can find it and what it's called.
It's called Lost in America, and it's available at lostinamericapod.com or on iTunes or on Google Play or on SoundCloud. And it's basically my co-host Turner Sparks is a comedian here in New York, but he was in China for about 12 plus years. And he ran a Mr. Softy truck, among other things. He brought that to China. He was very successful, a little too successful. So the Chinese government sort of took over his business for him. He got married and he moved back to America. And the podcast began because he had missed like almost like 13 years of American culture and was sort of clueless about, I don't know, how to live as an adult in America. So I was sort of like his guide. I'm clueless as well about like raising kids. So that's sort of the other story. And we have a lot of guests on who talk about, we have a lot of guests on who've traveled or have lived abroad or done sort of similar type things. Or we have guests on who are sort of experts in an area. I'm excited. We're going to have a guest next week who's an expert in free range parenting. So I want her to teach me how to be a free range parent, because I don't want to be a crazy parent, helicopter parent. So we do things like that. And then having this heart attack was, because what could be more lost in America than, you know, having a heart attack in Vermont. Mile, like, you know, an hour plus away from a hospital that can even help you and having to recover from it all.
I think anyone who tackles American healthcare system is officially lost in America. So thank you so much for your time.
But I've come out kind of pro it. Everything's worked good, and I haven't even got hit with any crazy bills yet. Knock on wood.
Nice. Oh, they're coming. The bills are coming. Sorry in advance.
What's gonna be the toll? Everyone asks me because the insurance sends out like one by one, like each thing that happened in the hospital, I get a bit like a, so how, what's, but they cover most of it. What's going to be the total bill of what it's cost? What do you think? What's the over under?
Oh, that's covered for you, or the actual number is probably 50 grand. Yeah. I don't know how much is covered. I don't know. Right.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be,
you're going to guess
maybe even more, but it's going to be covered. Hopefully.
Yeah. But I would guess 50 grand gross. Covered,
yeah. Okay, I was thinking it'd be higher, so we'll see.
I think it might be.
Oh, you were in the ICU. Yeah, no, totally, $100,000.
I was in ICU for like a week. So
$100,000.
I want it to be high, because most of it's covered, I want to feel like I'm getting my money's worth.
Yeah, totally, for being an American citizen.
Exactly.
All right, Kaplan, thank you so much for your time, and I hope you have a speedy recovery.
All right, I'll check back in if I have another heart attack.
Okay, plant-based diet, buddy.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh, all right.
Talk to you later.
In the last second. Bye. Yeah,
bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
All antidotes and patient-related details have been changed with respect to date, sex, and certain details so that patient identification is not possible.